The Guardian.
World Cup Daily with James Richardson on Guardian.co.uk.
World Cup Day 3, and it's never mind the Ballacks, here's the Germans as Socceroos get rogered red raw by the Man Shark. World Cup Daily salutes the standout performance so far this tournament and looks back on Sunday's other matches in all their underwhelming glory. There's your post and our special big preview of Monday's big, big lineup of games. Will Italy flop as badly as everyone says? Can the Dutch reconquer South Africa? And what are the Japanese? Their scoring columns have more zeros than the attack on Pearl Harbor, but will that change against Cameroon? All that and more in World Cup Daily. Hello, everyone. With us today, Guardian reporters John Ashdown.
Hello.
Scott Murray.
Hello.
And Josh Widdicombe.
Hello.
Hi, Josh. It's your first ever appearance.
It is. Exciting times.
Very, very exciting. Should mention you're a Guardian journalist and award-winning comedian.
Yes, I am.
Great. We were talking of appropriate names yesterday, and Josh for a comedian, that's pretty... Is that a nom de plume? Is it? Or...
No, I think my parents just knew. That,
wow.
Yeah, you know.
Right.
Hilarious in the first 3 days, so...
Well, and Scott, your parents knew you were going to be Scottish, so that worked as well.
Yeah, yeah, it's worked wonderfully well.
Marvellous, marvellous. Excellent. Opening 3 days of the tournament, best described as FIFA ho-hum, would you say? But Sunday night, that all changed.
Yeah, I mean, it was pretty poor for for the first few matches, really. It's one of these things with the World Cup that... World Cups, you enjoy them all as they happen, and you look back in retrospect and think, actually, Italy 90 wasn't very good, was it? But this one seems to like be going really quickly, like 2 days in, and we're already looking back going, this is bloody dreadful. But, yeah, thankfully, the Germans came along.
Well, I haven't actually been thinking this has been dreadful. That's kind of a compliment, really, yeah. To the host nation and the atmosphere.
Well, yeah, I mean,
taken us 3 days to realise, actually, the football's... been drab.
Well, I mean, a lot of people have been talking about that. Obviously, the opening ceremony was good fun because it was nice and short. But yeah, it's pretty much been atmosphere, vuvuzelas, and everyone's ignored the football, which is probably just as well, really.
Just as well. A cracking performance from the Germans tonight. The first proper team performance, I think, of the tournament, and that's the main item on our agenda today. Before we get into that, off we go with today's news headlines from around the wide, wide world of football.
Bong.
Argentina and Liverpool midfielder Javier Mascherano has fueled rumours that he'll be joining his former gaffer Rafa Benitez at Inter. Mascherano telling reporters that he's learning Italian while in South Africa. That way he can make his usual demand to move to Barcelona in Inter's own language.
Bong.
Algeria manager Rabah Sedane has revealed he'll quit his post after the World Cup final because of the team's ill discipline. 64-year-old says he will never set foot in the national team camp again. Given that he's currently in his fifth spell in charge, it's a bit like Barry promising not to argue with posters anymore.
Bong.
And the anti-Vuvuzela campaign continues with fresh complaints by teams disturbed by the noise both in stadiums and outside hotels. Players have lost pre-match sleep to the horn for years, just ask Ashley Young, but now organising chief Danny Jordan says Vuvuzelas could be banned. It's something we're looking into, says Danny. We've had complaints about the constant drone, but Alan Green's under contract. Right, Germany, Australia. Let's start by dialing up our Teutonic tutor, really, Raphael Honigstein, there in South Africa. Raphael, be frank, Raphael, I know you were quite bullish about Germany's chances, but presumably this performance exceeded even your expectations.
In a way, yes, but at the same time I thought that this game could only really have two possible outcomes, either really dull 0-0 draw where Australia would succeed to just park the bus and get everyone in their own half, or... the floodgates, and it was floodgates because the goal happened quite early, and Germany got lucky with a few refereeing decisions, so that card, the penalty that Australia should have had, in my view. And, of course, we know that the potential is there. The trick will be, can they do it against a side who can actually also attack? Because at the back, I'm still not convinced Germany has got what it takes to win the World Cup.
Interesting. When they come up with, an Emil Heskey, then that'll be the real measure of their worth, yeah?
Yes.
Right.
Exactly.
Yogi Löw update, where does this leave him?
I don't know. He seems to be running out of shirts wearing pyjama tops. I don't know if that's a reflection of his contractual situation. at a German FA. But no, there's still no new contract for him. The problem is not with him, because they want him and they want him to stay. The problem is with his right-hand man, Oliver Bierhoff. He is not the very most popular figure at the German FA, and so far, Lurt has said, it's me and him and Flick or no one of us. And they said, OK, then we'll have no one.
Refer, it's John Ashdown here. Just wondering, do you think the fact that Closer is now only a goal behind Pelé in the all-time World Cup scoring charts, is that playing on his mind at all?
No, I don't think so. It certainly wasn't on Lurt's mind, because I think it would have been a very good idea to leave him on the pitch. Because he could and should have perhaps had a hat-trick, and he's certainly very short of overtaking Gerd Müller, and then, of course, Ronaldo as the all-time best scorer in the world, which is crazy to think that Miroslav Klose could be better in terms of World Cup goals than Ronaldo, but that's just sort of the player he is, and him and Podolski have been saving themselves all season, so now it's payback time for Germany.
Mm, indeed so. Raphael, thank you very much for that update, and we look forward to speaking to you again soon.
Thank you, boys.
World Cup Daily with James Richardson. Just like being in South Africa.
What did we make then of Germany? Raphael, calm and composed in his appreciation of their performance, but is it just that Australia were really woeful?
I mean, Australia were incredibly poor after quite a bright start. But I don't know how much of that was Germany just completely outplaying them, because it was like reading one of the really early chapters in Wilson's Inverting the Pyramid. There were like about seven attackers coming from all different directions, and they were all quick and nippy and very electric. And yeah, but you know, even Closer began to look like a proper striker after about half an hour.
That was the scariest thing about it, really, the number of options they seemed to have at any one time.
I think so, yeah. I mean, the only worry was I wasn't quite sure. I mean, it was difficult when I was minute-by-minuting for the site and trying to work out exactly how they were set up. I just wonder if they had Schweinsteiger, Kedira in the middle, if one of them goes by the wayside, that might be the Achilles heel for Germany. I know Rafa talked about the defence hasn't been put under a test.
Well, Ozil as well, for people who hadn't been watching him, obviously nobody in this room, a revelation. Presumably any kind of knock to him would constitute a problem. But they were a joy to watch.
Oh, yeah, Ozil was wonderful. And it was really great to see a player who had been given a big build-up, and particularly, you know, Rafa obviously raved about him a fair bit, and for him to turn up and actually turn it on. He's the first player that's... Messi did it in patches, but Ozil's been the first guy who's really put on a performance for a full... Well, he was taken off with sort of 10 minutes to go just to keep him safe and sound. But he was fantastic, and he was prompting everything. He's going to cause a fair few teams a fair few problems.
It's easy to say Australia weak, but there's been quite a few teams that you could have said were weak so far, and the big teams haven't taken advantage of it. Like Nigeria weren't anything special, were they? And USA to an extent. So I think what was interesting was Australia, I mean, they had quite a lot of chance. They lost 4-0, but they could have easily scored a couple in the first half an hour or so.
But Germany could have had several more, no?
Oh, yeah, yeah. No, I'm not saying Australia had the better of the game. Mm. I'm saying that, you know, Germany will leave you to have chances. So that will probably come back and bite them.
OK, posting. People mentioning actually Ozil in the lookalike front, Peter Lorre. Yes.
I think he's a little bit like Beaker, the Muppet. He's got that sort of slightly goggly-eyed. You can imagine him speaking in a quite squeaky voice.
Yes. Other posts gave in. Well, at least if England meet this German side, they won't have to worry about going out on penalties. So here's a stat, actually. We were saying how the football had been a little bit underwhelming. And certainly Sunday's other games were Serbia, Ghana, Slovenia, Algeria. Before tonight's Germany-Australia match... If you take Italia 90 as the kind of commonly accepted nadir of this kind of tournament, the average number of shots on target per game so far, significantly less in this tournament than in Italia 90. Not only that, the number of goals scored per game, almost half what it was at Italia 90. So thank goodness for Germany. Australia, eh?
Germany were the first team to score more than one goal in a half as well.
Ooh, yeah. Good start. I tell you what we haven't said, actually. Tim Cahill's red card.
Yeah, it was a bit harsh, I thought.
A bit harsh.
I thought, well, it was from the replays, I thought it was quite hard to tell. There's one replay where it looks like he's deliberately sent his knees into the German player's
shins. He was withdrawing his feet, so
well,
as to avoid
yeah, that's the thing. The angle looks like he's deliberately putting his knees in, whereas on another replay, it just looks like it's a late tackle. I think it was probably only a yellow. But Cahill, I don't know, is Cahill that sort of player? Is he the sort of guy who would deliberately put his knees into somebody else's shin?
I don't think putting your knees in is widely considered a manoeuvre, is it?
Except if Douglas Bader played much, then probably it would have been. It means that he'll be out for certainly the next game, possibly more, we think. And Australia's next game is against Ghana, Sunday's other winners in the group. So that's great news for the Ghanese.
Ghanaians.
That's great news for the Ghanaians. What about Ghana? Anyway, the first African team to post a win.
From what I saw of this game, I quite enjoyed it. It was, Ghana actually was certainly the first African team to properly impress. They played with a sort of their trademark energy and forward drive, and probably Stojkovic, the Serbian keeper, was arguably their best player. Made a couple of decent saves. But it's great, and it's pleasing that they've actually got a win, because I think a draw would have left them, obviously, that's a ridiculous thing to say. It's good that they've got a win.
Right.
Because a draw would have been
potential
worse.
Opponents for England, of course.
Yeah, and I think they'd cause England a lot of problems.
Really?
We're hearing breaking news overnight is that Ledley King is going to be out of the rest of the tournament.
Oh.
Which leaves England short of a centre-half, and possibly having Jamie Carragher slotting in there, and with the sort of pace that and power that Ghana have, they could certainly cause England a few problems.
Oh, okay. Elsewhere, praise for Algeria, Slovenia, but it wasn't a particularly nice match. Although Slovenia will be delighted, the smallest team in the tournament, to be topping the table in that group.
I think the reason a lot of these games are low scoring cages. It must happen in every tournament. It really feels like there's a lot to lose in the first game, and a lot of teams would prefer to would be happy just to get a draw under their belts. Because if you lose, people feel essentially Serbia are out now. So a defeat.
But they're not.
They're not, but it feels like you've got a hell of a way to go if you lose your first game. So I think a lot of teams in groups that are quite tight with one big team and three quite level teams are just terrified of losing.
All right. And how about the Algerian goalkeeper, a nice post here from Choppy Chops, who says, Chouchi's having his nachos. Which pod gold, of course. Yes.
He was. I saw him in the African Cup of Nations, and he was hopeless then. And
what happened to him today, John?
Well, it was a fairly regulation strike from Robert Corran, formerly of West Brom, now free agent. And from the edge of the area, was quite. It wasn't straight at him a la Robert Green. It was down to his left, but he, instead of outstretching his arms towards the ball and with palms facing the ball to fetch it, he just sort of tried to shovel it up in his forearms and entirely missed it, and it flew into the bottom corner. And that was enough. One goal in that goal was always going to be enough to secure the points. And it gave Slovenia a real great start for them.
Give his manager a coronary, perhaps. Or not. Okay. Good. Let's hear a few more of your posts. Stingebags says, a bit disappointed there hasn't been a mention of South Korea yet. They looked good last night, even though Greece were rubbish, blah, 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 blah. We'll see how they fare on Thursday against Argentina. It's true, actually. We haven't mentioned South Korea, not today, but I mean, in general, we glossed over them yesterday, just talking about Greece. That was a measured team performance, wasn't it? They looked very composed.
I thought they played well, although obviously you have to have the caveat that Greece, potentially one of the worst teams in South Africa, but with Park took his goal. He had a lot to do from where he picked the ball up and tucked it away well. And when you've got somebody he has such an important role for them. It's different from his role with Manchester United. And if you've got a player of that sort of quality, you've always got a chance.
Yeah, it's funny. Alan Hansen saying you'll win nothing with young players. When you look down the Korean team sheet, that's patently wrong. Anyway. England's 1-1 draw with the USA occupying plenty of people's thoughts. Now, interesting to see the headlines on the American papers. New York Daily News just went with a giant ha! That was their front cover. Ha! On Sunday morning.
Wasn't it not a wraparound front where they had ye on the other side of it?
Very possibly. New York Post says USA wins 1-0. World Cup match ends with greatest tie against the British since Bunker Hill. In true revolutionary style, the underdog Americans. Actually, I'm going to do an American accent. In true revolutionary style. No, I'm not. In true revolutionary style, the underdog Americans came from behind and blasted the powerful Brits to a nail-biting 1-1 draw yesterday in one of the all-time great World Cup soccer battles.
Was it?
Yeah, it was. lots of people posting in talking about the ramifications of this 1-1 draw, what it really says about England. Slowest and clumsiest centre-back pairing in human history. Two clowns in midfield who couldn't maintain a passing rhythm if their lives depended on it. Seriously, outpassed by the USA, the shame. Any good sign will bend England over a table and have their way with them. Is that harsh or fair?
I think it's fair. I mean, England were obviously dreadful. But I think what's more telling is how Germany performed tonight rather than how England performed. I think that comparison, and even a misfiring Argentina side, you can see them getting better. You can see them...
Can you not see England getting better, though?
No. How can they possibly get better? The midfielders don't pass to each other. They simply can't pass. They were shanking really simple passes. I think I was reading Baz's report, actually, the minute by minute. At the end, he said that's not something that you come good at the natural rhythm of a tournament. I just don't think they have it in them to fix it.
It was sort of a performance it was a similar performance from a lot of the performances of the last sort of 12 months. I think the saving grace could be that, having watched Slovenia, Algeria this afternoon, that they should surely beat those.
But the thing is, Slovenia don't let in any goals. I mean, they let in 4 goals in qualifying, I think. I'm not sure if that includes the playoff against Russia. But, they're obviously difficult to deal with. England aren't going to rattle in 3, 4, 5, so...
They might, if Rooney gets on form. If they get more out of Ashley Cole, Karis Mikey's saying...
But you see, Rooney, to me, I mean, he's obviously a very, very good player, but he's not like a Messi player. He's not someone who'll create something for himself. He scored a lot of headers this season. That's why his tally went up. So, and everyone was saying that was a very good thing, and he's added another string to his bow, and that is true. But it's still sort of good old fashioned English centre forward play. It's not it's not this sort of fantastic creative thing. That England just don't have a playmaker. Mm. And if Rooney isn't, he's obviously world class, but he isn't that.
Mm. So. All right. Well, Barry's wrong posting. Biggest loser on Saturday night was the myth of Capello being a football genius. In South Africa is Jonathan Wilson, the aforementioned author of Inverting the Pyramid. It'd be interesting to get his take on the game. I know, Jonathan, are you there?
Yes, I'm here. Yeah, how are you doing?
Hi, Jonathan. I am well. How are you?
Yeah, good, thanks. Yeah.
Excellent. You were writing for a rival, but no less interesting for all that, outlet Sports Illustrated, that the whole fuss over the Rob Green howler in last night's game against the USA is pretty much masked the other horrible problems that England have.
Yeah, I think that's right. I mean, you've got to look where did that shot from Dempsey come from, and it came from exactly that pocket in front of the back four that we've seen, really for the last 7 years since Jim and Bob first played together, that space in the back four, they tend to leave unprotected. Now, Gerrard got back there, but he'd been out of position to start. He let Dempsey get passed on quite cheaply. So, yeah, I mean, obviously the main fault it was Green's, but I think there's a structural problem there that led to that. So, Gerrard and Lampard in the middle of midfield, I think, is an ongoing problem, as we're all aware. Then another issue, I think one of the key issues yesterday was that when Rooney was playing too high up the field, I think when England were playing well in the qualifiers, Rooney's tend to play quite deep off Heskey. Now, his role at Manchester United obviously has changed over the last season. He's now playing as the main front man. So possibly he's sort of thought he's not playing deeper, and that makes England far more static. It creates this very big, stodgy 4-4-2 that really has been a problem with England when they've been playing badly for, I don't know, 20 years or so.
Mm. John, aside from England, what else have you learnt from the first 3 days of this tournament?
I've learned that people jump to conclusions far too quickly. I mean, all this about it being a terribly negative and defensive World Cup, just because there haven't been that many goals. I think, we've really got to wait at least until the first round of games is finished before we start jumping to conclusions about that. I think really what we've seen is a series of very tight games, because there haven't been, until the Germany-Australia game tonight, there hasn't really been a huge difference, huge quality differential in any of the games. I guess possibly South Korea-Greece, South Korea was significantly better, and they could have won more comfortably in 2-0. But And I think 0-0s and 1-1s in many ways are actually more interesting than more goals. We look back at, say, 54, which is a very high-scoring World Cup. A lot of those games were 8-3s and 9. But I'd rather watch a tight 1-1. Mm. So maybe it hasn't been fantastic attacking football, but I think there has been very competitive, quite intriguing football. And I suspect that once the likes of Spain, Holland and Brazil have got going, we'll see that goal average going up.
Right, I want to see the Football Weekly T-shirt produced with "goals are overrated" there on the front. Brilliant. And you've been enjoying yourself so far, yes?
Pretty much, yeah. I mean, I'm slightly undecided about whether having the World Cup here is a good thing or not. But part of me sort of sees the romantic side of it and sees how much it means to people here and how excited everybody is that this is happening. And you go out in the streets and people are genuinely, you're really enthused by this and you think, oh, that's brilliant. And then you have situations like today where, I mean, I'm staying in Rustenburg and I was trying to get to Pretoria for the Serbia-Ghana game and I just couldn't get there because the guys weren't giving me lifts, ended up not being able to give me a lift. And if you haven't got a car, there's no way of moving about within South Africa. Now, whether giving a World Cup to a country whose infrastructure is so poor that there's no way of travelling a distance of 2 hours, maybe not 2.5 hours possibly, by public transport. There's no way of doing that. Whether that's a good idea or not, I'm not sure. I mean, it's not good for journalists. I'm not sure it's good for fans.
It's worrying for England's 2018 bid as well, isn't it?
On the other hand, people here are phenomenally excited by it and there is a great enthusiasm around it. So, I'm undecided whether this World Cup's a good thing or not yet.
All right, well, let us know how that debate proceeds and enjoy yourself in the meantime. Jonathan, thanks for joining us this evening. Holland-Denmark then coming up on Monday. Bentner is all but ruled out of the game. And he scores some cracking goals for Denmark, does he not? Simon Kjær is fine, apparently, who's the defensive player that everyone's so excited about, the Palermo player. It's going to be interesting to see Holland play, to see exactly how strong a threat they are.
Yeah, they had a very impressive qualification, didn't they? But I think, no one's really picked them out to get beyond the semis at most. I think the problem for Holland is that's kind of the hard side of the draw. They've got Spain and Brazil in that side, and that's kind of going to be quite a blessing for England if they manage to get out their group. I think that's part of the reason that it's got off to a bit of a slow start is perhaps the three most exciting teams haven't played yet, which is Holland, Spain and Brazil.
Yeah, only Spain completed more passes in qualifying than Holland.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay, well, they're unbeaten in the last 19, stretching all the way back to September 2008. The Danes, meanwhile, lost warm-up matches to Australia and South Africa before the tournament began, which is when you have your warm-up matches. Japan, Cameroon. Oh, talking of bad warm-up matches, Japan. 4 straight defeats before that hastily arranged training ground game with Zimbabwe. In fact, the only team they managed to actually score against was England. Not sure what that tells us. And they're up against Cameroon. I would think that they're one of the stronger African candidates for success. Are they not, Cameroon? No, John?
Don't know. I quite like Japan, I think.
Do you?
I think they've got a half a chance of getting out of that group.
Right. Okay. Why?
Why?
Yeah.
I think they've got experience at the back. They've got some exciting players going forward. Mm-hmm. They've got a defensively-minded manager who I don't think is the Japanese fans presented a petition to the Japanese FA earlier this year demanding that he resigned.
Oh, really?
Yeah, but obviously that was ignored and...
Didn't I think fall on his sword.
No, clearly not.
His name's Takeshi Okada. I'm wondering if it's hard to beat Takeshi.
Oh, very good.
One for Sineas. Yeah. That. Yeah. Yeah. Okay, but no, do go on.
Oh, I've been derailed now.
Sorry. They wanted him to resign,
but he didn't. I think he is going after the tournament.
Oh,
and he's aiming for the semi-finals, slightly ambitiously perhaps. But they have got a few interesting players going forward. It's that experienced base to build from. No, I think Japan might win that tomorrow.
Keisuke Honda up front for them, but of course Samuel Eto'o, second top scorer in African World Cup qualifiers with 9 in 11 appearances. So, could see some goals there. And, of course, it's defending world champions Italy taking on Paraguay. But you've got loads of questions about how the Italians are looking coming into this
Well, yeah. I mean, do they have anyone under the age of 29?
Yeah, they have loads of their. I mean, Lippi.
And do they have a playmaker?
Yes, they do.
That being.
Well, they have kind of.
That's any good. Sorry, I should have.
Right. Well, Andrea Pirlo, as you probably know, is out for at least the first two games.
Yeah.
And it looks like Ricardo Montolivo is going to come in and take that position. Now, Montolivo hasn't been world-beating in a similar role at Fiorentina, but he is a very, very skilled ball player. And I think Marchisio as well could well be, if things turn out right, he could be the real revelation, perhaps more than Montolivo, who is more the direct replacement for Pirlo in his early games. Mm. I think Marchisio could be the flair player that Italy really have been lacking. He's had a great season for Juventus, or a greatest season as was possible among the wreckage, the car crash that was Juve's season. So that'll be interesting. They're probably going to line up, the theory is, with three across behind a lone striker, which will either be Pazzini or more probably that fellow Girardino again. Marchisio right behind him, and then either Pepe or Iaquinta out on one side and Camoranesi maybe on the other, or Pepe, however that one pans out. And the thing is, though, when you look back to the last World Cup, I mean, they had some great performances in the last World Cup, and they had some really rugged, dogged defensive performances. And the player of the tournament was Cannavaro. Mm. It's hard to see who's going to be putting in that kind of a world-beating performance this time around. And Cannavaro himself, who's so aged that he's now off to the Emirates, is no longer that kind of player. And you know, if you worry about Carragher and King, Cannavaro, I think as Fulham proved all too well in the Europa League, anybody running at him with even anything remotely resembling pace is going to cause him lots of problems. So in that sense, it's not the most inspiring. Paraguay, South Americans who aren't Argentina, Brazil, are not usually too highly rated, but it should be pointed out that this lot have actually beaten Argentina and Brazil in their World Cup qualifying, although they are now without their top scorer in qualifying, who's on his way back from being shot in the head, knack, which is a tough one, of course. And I think also the other chap who's been doing really well, was it Oscar Cardoza? He's in doubt for the game, so be interesting to see. I mean, they have goals in them, Paraguay.
Yeah, they've got a bit of firepower up front. Mm. Valdez, the Dortmund player, and Santa Cruz, who...
Rocky Santa Cruz!
..sits on the bench for Manchester City.
Yeah, indeed he does.
I don't think... They don't tend to beat European teams at World Cups, and Italy don't tend to lose to South American teams at World Cups, I think. But Paraguay have got extra motivation to win the whole thing. There's a model in Paraguay who's promised to have sex with all the players should they win the trophy.
Cheapers.
One at a time or all at once?
I don't know. Alphabetically, perhaps. She doesn't specify the what order. She says, women from my country are ardent, and to be honest, I'm more ardent than most.
Right.
I take no notice of societal norms.
Crikey.
Would the players have a choice in it, or is it...
They'd just be frog marched in.
Right, okay.
But still, that's, you know, some countries have win bonuses. Italy are... in a bit of not trouble for their win bonuses.
All countries are.
Criticism.
Certainly beats being pulled off at half-time, doesn't it, as the age-old joke goes. But you wonder if England, if anyone in England is prepared, any top model in England is prepared to make a similar offer?
Although the promiscuity of the England squad, you might suggest that the more...
The more apt or shocking
promise would be not to have sex with all the players.
Wow, there you go. There you go. On that thought-provoking and quite mature note, that's where we come to the end of today's World Cup Daily. Another one follows tomorrow, so I do hope you'll be joining us for that as we look back on what looks like a really terrific series of fixtures in South Africa 2010. Thanks very much to John, to Josh, and to Scott and producer Ben, and you, the listener. Bye for now.
For more great downloads, go to guardian.co.uk/audio.